The Athletic.
Hello, welcome to From the Rookery End. My name is John. It's a podcast all about Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic, and it is an away day. Watford away at Arsenal, yeah. I'm on my way. I'll be meeting DCW, Colin, Mike, Arlo and Flo are also there. Kieran's going to be coming as well. So it's going to be a great day out, and this is going to be our little journey and story of our day of seeing Watford play away. And we don't know what's going to happen. Arsenal are in very good form, as we heard on Thursday's podcast from Art. I'm sceptical, but I think it's going to be good. And I do like an away day in London because it's so much easier. I can leave the house, I can just walk down the road, and I'm halfway there within half an hour. And we can all meet up a little bit earlier in places that we sort of know. And it's just not that rush and that stupid long journey you have to do on certain away games. So it's much more practical to go to these away games in London, and Arsenal especially, because I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. They're definitely the closest club to Vicarage Road as the crow flies. Lots of geeky facts for you from John. Thank you very much.
From the Rookery End.
So we've made it into London. Michael's with me. Hi, Michael.
Hi, John. Hi.
And DCW.
Hello.
And we are, we're just waiting for the pub to open, really. We're ahead of ourselves after brunch.
Tragic, isn't it?
It's tragic. It's just sipping on your can. But it's a couple of hours until kickoff. Now, we have a lot of chats on our WhatsApp group, Mike.
Yeah.
Do you find sometimes it's a bit distracting to your life, our WhatsApp group?
It's probably more distracting to the rest of you than me, some of the stuff I put in there. But no, I think it's a welcome little place for me to vent. I just feel sorry for you guys, really.
I sometimes, during a working day, flick over and notice there's 50-odd messages, and I was there. But we do have some conversations. Particularly this week, one came up about, could you put together a starting 11 of loanees that have been loaned to Watford over the years? I said DCW the challenge of putting all the suggestions that we had on the group, and he has come up with an 11. Are there any players in particular, Mike, that you really hope be in there? Because remember, the big caveat I've given him is that they were never allowed to become a permanent player. So Amin Abdi, can't put him. Vidra, can't put him. Tommy Mooney, can't have him, because he was a loan that turned into a permanent signing. Nara Nosworthy, who would you think, Mike, you would love to see in that Loney 11?
I know who I don't want to see in it. And I'd never quite have forgiven him. Our world would be completely different now, I think. And we'd have spoken about so many different stories if he'd have been a better footballer. Matthew Briggs.
No, come on.
I've never seen someone disintegrate so quickly. I think he started off relatively promisingly, didn't he? He came with a relative sort of quite good pedigree behind him. And then by the time he got to that Leicester game, he was an abomination. I think the Burnley game as well, he was poor. So I don't want to see him in it.
Okay.
In fact, I hope, and you know, this is no disrespect to Matthew Briggs, I hope he's all right. I hope he's enjoying himself. But I don't want to hear him mentioned in conjunction to Watford anymore.
Steve Leo Bellick.
Another one, yeah.
No, but wasn't he the most loan player ever?
He was kind of the poster boy, wasn't he, for loans. He almost became the sort of code word for loanees that never really appeared, didn't he? So look, let's just hear what DCW's come up with, I reckon.
The one I was looking forward to is Andrew Taylor. Taylor. Didn't he score his first ever professional goal when he was on loan at Watford? And it was an absolute thunder blaster from outside the box. I want to say it was against Cardiff or Portsmouth.
That sounds about right. And did you catch Kacanichlich as well? He never signed.
Oh, yeah.
He was quite good. And Andy Vyman as well. I thought he was quite good for us.
Scored yesterday for Bristol City. Yeah.
Yeah, he's still going strong, isn't he? And I think they sort of sum up for me that the period when we were really, really loan heavy, players that are okay, but really actually caught the eye at the time. I thought, oh, he's a bit of all right. He's really, really good. Because it felt like where they were coming from, they're a cut above what we already have. But, we've moved on, haven't we, from then?
DCW, let's start back to front. Who'd you go for in goal?
Well, I think Mike might have stolen my thunder there a little bit.
foreshadowed a few of my picks. Well, you know, in goal, I have gone for, because there's not a lot to pick from in goal, but I've gone for Orestis Karnisis.
Yes.
Now, we might have forgotten about him, but he obviously played in the latter half of the 17-18 season. The reason I've got him ahead of the other thing, I could have had Tomasz Kuszek, yeah. I think. But I've picked Karnisis because he kept out Gomez.
Oh, yeah, he did.
And if you're good enough to keep out Gomez, you're good enough for me. So that's why he's in goal.
Yeah, Kuszek probably just kept out Scott Loach.
Yeah, exactly. Different thing entirely. Left back, we'll go left back next. You've already called him out. Andrew Taylor.
Yeah!
That wonderful volley. I think it was against Portsmouth.
It was definitely against a team wearing blue during that wonderful run we had that season where Danny Graham was on fire. And it was, I think it was on telly.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. I think we won 2-0 that day. But yeah, lovely volley from the edge of the box. So we got him. I've got a centre-back pairing. Two fairly agricultural, robust centre-halves that both did a good job for us in their time. One is Nyren Nosworthy, who played under Dyche.
He can't have Nyren.
Why not?
Because he became a permanent signing.
Did he?
Yeah.
Well, he was on your list.
I told you.
He was on the spreadsheet. Well, that's your fault.
Okay,
he's in.
All right.
He's in. He's
to be
in.
Fair, it was a working list.
and the other one is Matthew Connolly.
Yes.
Who I think is very much the forgotten man
of that
14-15 promotion. He came in, and everyone talks about Ben Watson coming in halfway through the season and sort of helping us out and stealing us up a bit. Well, he came in as well, and he did help us get over the line in some crucial games when we needed a bit of strength at the back. I know Troy Deeney talks of him very highly when mentioning that team. And right back, I've got Chris Baird. Remember him?
I can't picture him.
But he was on loan from Southampton in sort of the early noughties. He went on to be part of the Fulham team that reached the Europa League final.
Yeah. I can see him now. Yeah.
Oh, he wasn't on my list. But well done.
As solid a right back as you could wish to find.
But are you thinking more of that because of what he did afterwards than his time at Watford? Did he shine for you at Watford?
I think he was as he was in the rest of his career. He was just neat and tidy and solid when he played for Watford. I think it was under Lewington. It was in one of the Lewington seasons. I'm going 4-4-2. So I've got midfield four of left wing Alexander Kaczyniklic.
Exactly what we said for the entire time he was here.
Kaczyniklic, who a player that didn't really go on to do anything really, but looked like he was a really exciting. Had a lot of potential on loan from Fulham. I've got a midfield two of one Jack Cork,
nice,
who I think went on to be one of the he had a very good career, still playing for Burnley, isn't he? But he was one of those players that played under Brendan Rodgers and shined in that brief spell that we had under Brendan before we all know what happened. The other, alongside him in the midfield, I've got Daniel Tozer.
And he was a player I was hoping you would find there, David, because he never signed permanently. He played for a long time, but he was always on loan. So he doesn't get the permanent signing. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got free kicks going in straight away. We haven't got Amin Abdi, but we've got some free kicks already in the team.
I think he was actually on a 2-year loan deal.
Yeah, it was something like that,
from
wasn't
Palmer.
It?
Yeah, exactly. The lesser spotted 2-year loan deal. Right wing, I've got a player who was one of the earliest that I can remember when I was sort of going regularly to matches, had a season ticket and everything, who just really made me excited, and that was Jermaine Pennant. I mean, he had two loan spells with us, I think, but the one where he played, there was a FA Cup match against West Brom. I think it was a fourth round match. And that, I think it was in the season that we got to the, possibly in the season we got to the semi-final, maybe it was the season after, but it was around that time, and it was back when he was still a bright young thing at Arsenal, hadn't properly broken through yet. He was still, a few years before that, transferred for £1 million as a 15-year-old from Notts County. He was really exciting, did go on to have a hell of a career, really, played a Champions League final, an illustrious career, really. But back in those early days, I remember he was a player that when he got the ball, I can just in my mind hear the seats of the Rookery End all just going up
as he gets down
towards the byline. Yeah. Now up front, now I'm going to take some stick for this.
We're prepared to give it to you, Dave. Yeah.
Neither of these two men really made much of an impact on Watford during their loan spells. Perhaps both of them, well, certainly one of them known more for his sort of post-career exploits, but the other one's following in his footsteps. So I've got the TalkSport twosome of Mickey Quinn and Gabriel Agbonlahor up front.
Where do we start with that?
Now, I'm pretty sure Agbonlahor played in the game that I went to away at Crewe, we lost 1-0 in the Boothroyd season. He only played a couple of games for us, didn't he? I might be wrong, but here comes Cole. But yeah, he didn't do anything, but obviously went on to have a brilliant career for Aston Villa and all that, and he's now can now be heard giving you his views on the world of football on a regular basis on Talk Sport, which the same could also have been said for much of the last 20 years about one Mr. Mickey Quinn, who in his day was a fine goal scorer.
He wasn't at Watford.
Got a Premier League hat-trick under his belt, a very quick one against for Coventry in the early days of the Premier League. Obviously played 5 games for Watford and was a disgrace. He was absolutely massive, the size of a house by the time he turned up for us. But I've worked with him a fair bit in my professional life. He's a nice man. So he gets the nod. Quinny and Agbonlahor up front. Come on, the lads. We'll recap the team from front to back because Mike's come back and we'll get his reaction. So in goal, Karnesis. Back four of Taylor, Nosworthy, Connolly, Baird. Yeah, happy with that. Midfield four of Kaczyniczlik, Jack Cork, Daniel Tozer, Jermaine Pennant.
Blimey.
Yeah, and you haven't heard my front two yet.
Wait for it.
Up front, Gabriel Agbonlahor and Mickey Quinn.
Michael Quinn, Esquire. Good Lord. Well, the only saving grace to that absolute monstrosity of an 11 is that he didn't go for Kerry Dixon. I don't know why.
It's a big man, little man partnership, but I think Agbonlahor's taller than Quinny, but he's still the little man.
God, dear. I mean, fascinating, though, isn't it? Because we had Agbonlahor at the start of his career, and he looked just nowhere near that he was going to be able to make a career in football. He actually went on to score quite a few goals for the Villa, didn't he? God, I don't know if I'd feel happier going to watch that team or the team we're going to watch at Arsenal this afternoon. I'm not sure quite which one would disappoint me more. But yeah, I mean, it just feels, just hearing some, I mean, don't get me wrong, some of them are...
I'm sure Quinny's hat-trick in the Premier League was at Highbury against Arsenal for Coventry.
He just scored so many goals, man.
He's the man for the occasion.
It just does feel like a bygone age. And we're sort of quite light-hearted about it. But there's some proper serious names in amongst those, isn't there?
A lovely mix of like those players that were solid but were just out of favour at a club, like an Andrew Taylor, and a lot of young, exciting players who you could see the potential. There's some lovely, like I said, you talk about the moments where you see Jermaine Pennant get the ball as a Watford player and you'd feel excited.
You know what?
They didn't necessarily do it the whole of their career, but when they were Watford players, you love that excitement of seeing them, almost feeling the potential of them, their whole career just bursting out at Vicarage Road.
Jermaine Pennant, of course, left his car at an airport for about 3 years, didn't he? Remember, he forgot that he'd left the car at the airport. But what that discussion is, it's almost like a perfect audio time capsule of Watford, isn't it? It's a time where we were either scrabbling around for players to fill holes like Mickey Quinn, for example, or others that we were trying to bring in to take us up to the next level. But it feels like that it really is a moment in time, and whilst those names span a relatively long period, it's a perfect encapsulation of what Watford perhaps were perhaps earlier in the decade, sort of about a decade ago. I think
we should start the podcast.
Go on, crikey, decent lineup that DCW, but
would they survive the Premier League, Michael?
Premier League, they wouldn't survive in the Unibond Premier League.
Is that just Mickey Quinn?
None of them.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
So, Colin, we've been to a local pub. What a lovely pub the Pineapple is.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I spend far too much time in there.
No, it's a classic London corner pub, but it was the perfect level, I think. That's for me. And before we go off to the Emirates, which we've got an hour to go before kickoff, it was the perfect sort of size and busyness. Just perfect to have a lovely footballing friend chat.
Yeah, it was very nice to have you all in Kentish Town, in the Colin Mace homeland. So we're quite a large crowd. There's Mike with both Florence and Arlo, and my two are here, another Florence and Lily, and our good friend and contributor to the podcast, Oliver Wicken, is here with his oldest son, DCW, Hollywood's Kieran Hollywood, you and me. So yeah, so we're going to walk now, 25 minutes. Walking to a football is part of the culture and history of football, I think, walking to the ground. So this is the only game that I can walk to in the whole season, away at the Filthy Gooners. So I'm looking forward to it. No, I'm not.
You're not going to say. That's a lie. That's an absolute lie from everything you've been saying in the pub, Colin. But we've got the lineups, Colin. Foster, Rose, King, Nkulu, Cathcart, Tufan, Sissoko. Kiko is back. Saar, Dennis and Kuchka. Now, for me, my favourite thing about that is after our conversations last week about Ismaïla Sarr and how he wasn't quite on form, is that his best buddy, Kiko, is back with him.
No, that's true. And I stand by what I said last week. I do think that Kiko makes Sarr better because I think he's an older head. He gets up and back more and he encourages Sarr to play. Whereas I think Ngakia, as I said last week, is much younger, much less experienced and really just focuses on himself, which is, I guess, what he should do. But Sarr didn't help him out very much last week. I expect that combination today will hopefully work a bit better, offensively and defensively, but we'll have to wait and see. I do think that Cathcart and Nkulu, I mean, that's another brand new pairing at centre-back. Surprised that Sir Alter isn't playing. Bit surprised that Troost Ekong isn't playing. But more surprised that Cleverley isn't playing. He's picked Tufan instead of Cleverley. So that'll be... But at least we've got three central midfielders, John.
That's the important thing. But that was your thing. You said about the... You know, I think what I want... I suspect you're thinking of your mind is that you don't necessarily mind who is the central three. It's the fact that they are operating in the right way, and they haven't been for you.
No, I mean, when Pedro was playing last week, he was playing as part of a front four, I thought. And so he wasn't doing that central midfield blocking role, and Southampton were able to pass through us really, really comfortably and easily. We didn't really challenge them in that area, and that's why they camped out on our 18-yard line for so much of the first half. We were better in the second half when Cleverley and Senna came on because they were a bit more robust in that midfield area and stopped Southampton from just doing whatever they pleased. Whether Tufan is going to do that. Tufan is a creative player, so he'll probably play ahead of the other two, but he'll need to be, you know, protecting them while they try to protect the back four, because it's going to be very, very difficult.
I think my thing about Tufan, I'm expecting creativity, but I'm not expecting where Cleverley was wonderful to harass and harangue and to move forward. I feel like he's not going to necessarily get as far out of the situation of being a midfielder as Tom was. No. And it just feels a little bit more... As long as Sissoko and Kuchka are protecting and he's doing that forward role, it feels a little bit more balanced in what we need today, which is attack, but cover.
The other thing we need is that for Dennis and Saar to play their part defensively.
Yeah.
To protect their fullbacks and to get in nice and narrow and tight when we haven't got the ball and make it really difficult for Arsenal just to play their lovely tick-attacker through us, because if we let them do that, then they'll just destroy us. The other thing that's going to be interesting to see is the way is Nkulo's influence on the whole defensive unit, including, I would say, Kutzka and Sissoko. Is he a shouter? He's a very experienced player.
Yeah.
Is he fit enough to play a full 90 minutes, having not played for 18 months or whatever it is? But it'll be interesting to see what his influence is. You know, he's a very experienced senior professional. Is he going to lead? Is he going to be that person sort of shouting and organising and pointing? And or is he just going to be more quiet? We need a leader on the pitch.
Yeah.
We haven't really had that since Deeney left. And Deeney led from the front, which is not an easy place to do it, but he did do it. He came back, he rang midfielders. He was yelling at and pointing and telling them where to go. And
yeah, but leadership isn't always about that. Leadership can be many, many different things. Leadership can be, look, I'm playing to this level, you follow me, because look, I'm leading by example. I'm not leading by telling you off, which I always thought Deeney did.
Yep.
And what I love about this, Colin, is that we're on our way to the Emirates, and later on we'll have a conversation with Mike and DCW about what happened.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff we've said will be absolutely spot on, hopefully. And some will be absolutely rubbish. But we'll see. What are you thinking, Carl? What do you want to see?
It's hard to be optimistic. I'd like to see us be more organised, to not be so easy to play against. I don't expect us to win this game. Arsenal are in a decent vein of form, and you know, would expect them to get over the line at home with a full house against us, who have struggled just to compete really in games. We know that even at home against Southampton, we only had 36% possession. Hopefully Tufan might be that person. We know he can be comfortable on the ball. We need to be able to get the ball and keep it for periods where we can then do something with it. And in recent games, we've just got the ball for 5 seconds and then we've given it up. So I'd like to see us hold on to the ball. I'd like to see us compete in midfield. You know, it's my big bugbear when we don't do that. But yeah, I'm not feeling massively optimistic. I feel a little bit like I'm walking to a hanging.
Don't worry, they'll do some magnificent within 5 minutes, and our positivity will go through the roof, I think, hopefully.
We're the Orns, you're the Orns. Come on, you Orns!
So, we have left the Emirates. Still don't like it compared to the Highbury. But hey, I'm an old school football fan. Watford 0, Arsenal 1. Michael, you leave Arsenal probably better off than you thought we were going to be.
Well, definitely.
Come
not
on, I mean, you're a pessimistic. You were thinking 7 or 8, I suspect.
Definitely not better off. It's cost me a fortune in the hostelries of Upper Street before the game. But I think it was a
not finished yet either.
Yeah, I think we might have to double our intake after to calm myself down after that. I think ultimately come away frustrated and disappointed, which I think is good, because it means we weren't tonked, we weren't out of the game at any stage despite being 1-0 down and down to 10 men late on. It always felt like there was a point there, but that is incredibly frustrating, because much like the games with Southampton at home and Newcastle at home, when you are presented with opportunities to get points in the Premier League, you have to take them. This is a very, very poor Arsenal side.
No, it isn't. They're not poor like Newcastle. They're not poor like Southampton.
They're not a poor side. I mean,
Arsenal side. Come on.
Let me rephrase. Yes. It was a poor Arsenal performance that I thought allowed us an opportunity to get something out of the game.
DCW, are you looking at the same way as Mike? Missed opportunity?
I think so. I think if you take it, look at it like this. I think Arsenal, on balance, Arsenal play better than us. They are a decent Arsenal side. They probably didn't play as well as they have been playing in the last few weeks. We frustrated them.
Yeah.
The referee undoubtedly played a game in terms of, you know, in contrast to a lot of what we've seen this season in terms of referees letting play flow. He was blowing up for everything from the first minute, and that contributed to a stop-start sort of bitty game.
Well, what that does is it stops Watford getting any pressure. It stops any build-up of momentum for Watford. And I'm going to get this out of the way. Sorry, Dave, and then you can come straight back in.
Let's let him do it. Come
and it is that we've seen it time and time again. It's the no tackle at the Emirates rule, isn't it? You aren't allowed to tackle here. And that, I know that sounds flippant and glib and silly, but that's what it feels like watching. And obviously it's frustrating when you're the opposition. But I thought, as Dave said, that what he was giving free kicks for was a nonsense. But worse than that, what he was giving yellow cards for was an absolute, was a joke as far as I'm concerned.
You know, you take all that into account, we rode our luck massively. You know, we thought we'd gone 1-0 down, 1-0 down after 6 minutes. It was clearly offside, so that's, you know, but the defending that led to that situation was poor, so that was a let off. We gave away a penalty, which looked like fair enough. Rose didn't really get much of the ball, knocked over Lacazette, I think it was. Foster pulls out a brilliant save, gathers it at the second attempt. You know, again, a lifeline. So, and then towards the end of the game, we've conceded a goal. We're still hanging on in there. Josh King is presented with a fantastic opportunity to equalise. Ramsdale completely misses it. And King, we were right behind it where we were sitting. King made a snap decision. He was confident and he thought, right, I'm going to try and get it in at a tight angle. But what he should have done, easy to say this for us in hindsight, well, we're not him, but what he should have done was taken a few touches, given himself a better angle, or he could have given himself the option to square it. It was an open goal. He saw the goal, but it was such a tight angle and he just snatched it and it went wide. And, you know, so get all of those things into account, it's a really frustrating afternoon. And, of course, we have to mention the fact that, as far as I can see it, unless I'm mistaken, unless if we watch it back on TV and we're mistaken, Rose kicks the ball out
for an injured player.
And then Arsenal take the throw-in, and within about 10 seconds, they scored a goal. Now, I've already had some quite strongly worded remonstrations with some of my Arsenal friends on WhatsApp who are going, oh, it's nothing, fella. Oh, it's nothing. Oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, absolute nonsense. If that was the other way around, they would have been up in arms. That's no good. That is no good.
Yeah, the game would have been... There would have been calls for the game to be replayed. Watford bringing the game into disrepute. But, of course, just speaking to Stu, friend of the podcast, and unfortunately, in situations like this, Watford are collateral damage. They are... If we read the papers tomorrow morning, there will not be, I guarantee it, one mention of the fact that that goal came from the fact that the ball was put out by a Watford player. The fact of the matter is, I don't think that there was an injury. I think he was perfectly fine. So the rights and wrongs of whether the ball should have been put out at that stage, if I was him, I'd have hoofed it down the other end and put it out, you know, like a rugby place kick. Yeah. Make sure you put it out, but put it down out over your own halfway line. But he obviously put the ball out on the basis it was going to come back, and it didn't. And I thought that probably tells you where Arsenal were at, that they felt that they weren't able to do the decent thing, do the thing that happens 999 times out of 1,000 in football. When the opposition puts the ball out for a player to get treatment, the ball goes back. Whether it's right or wrong, that's what happens. And they didn't do it. And I think the fact that they did that, I think, shows that they were panicked and we were frustrating them. Dave's absolutely right. Arsenal deserved the win, really, I guess, on the overall balance of play, the penalty, the goal. They scored, we didn't, ultimately. Foster had to pull off a really good save at close range later on. Really, really fierce hit that he did well to get his arms up and block. But I think that incident is pretty grim, really, and it just sort of adds to the end. You know, we're talking half an hour after the final whistle, and it always feels quite raw, and I guess it'll make sense to watch it all back. But that, in conjunction with the fact that we had that amazing chance, when we did get at them down that flank, they did make a mistake. When we did ask questions, they looked vaguely wobbly.
Well, my thing is, when we asked questions, when we pushed them, I think it took... I had a lovely afternoon, sat next to young Alfie, his dad, Adam, and his uncle, Ross, chatting away the whole game down right at the front. We were here at the Emirates. And it took, thanks to Adam for pointing it out, it took the 70 minutes for Ismail Assar to battle for a ball. It took until very, very late on for us to try and attack and try and score some goals, DCW. You know, we always start the bat and go to the front, but you know, that attacking options wise today, we talked about the possibility of a chance for King, but there weren't any other real true chances. And it did take, I think it really took until Kuche came on, where there was all of a sudden a bit more impetus for us to be an attacking force when Arsenal were one up. But they were only one up. You know, we've been in a situation with Liverpool, they were five up, and we're going, we're trying, yeah, but they're not trying because they're five up. It I suppose that my head looking forward, I'm seeing in the steps of Ranieri from the games he's played, there was a little bit more organisation in that performance, just not from the front.
I'm loath to criticise the front players. It's a difficult afternoon for them. Arsenal are a team that want to keep the ball. They want to draw you in to try and encourage you to press them and then play around you, which is what they started to do towards the end of the game in particular. you know, you when you're Josh King, it's a thankless task. You might get a few scraps. You might get the ball into the channels. You've got to chase it down. The same with Sarr.
No, but King, I agree with. He was doing what a set forward did. But Ismail Assar, we were chatting away, and I, you know, that whole thing of. At no point in the first 10 minutes, you go, I'm going to run at him. I'm going to start putting the ideas in their head.
I'm not having this constant criticism of Sarr. How many times do we get the ball to him?
Yeah,
how many times do we get the ball in space to him? Yeah, okay, maybe he could make a better runs. Maybe there was times when Kiko had the ball and Sarr, where's Sarr? He's not making the run. Maybe there's clearly a lack of confidence. He's quite an up and down player, but it's really difficult. And towards in the second half, he was getting round. He was winning. Territory, he was getting the ball into reasonable positions, but there was really, you know, there was a lack of quality into the box. We didn't create any chances. Ramsdale didn't have to really make a save at all. There was a few pot shots from Kuzma, and you know, yeah, we need to try and be a bit more of a genuine threat, but it is a difficult game. That the task today was to scrap and to fight and to hold on and try and get something on a break, on a counter, on a mistake for Arsenal. And we nearly got that. We got the mistake for Arsenal, and we didn't take advantage of it. And that's that.
I think what we've said it before, and I think the same is as true now as it will be for the rest of the season. We've got players who need to be at 95% to get anything out of probably any game in the Premier League. We're going to come up against sides who are at the very minimum our equal, and most of the time significantly better than us in every department. And I think it's right. I think it's. It's frustrating that we're not scoring, and then you look at Ismail Assar as our main threat. We've decided as a supporter base he's our main threat. But I make Dave absolutely right. Flo and Arlo are complaining a little bit about him. I'm like, well, hang on. His job is to be a striker, is to be a threat down the flank. What options are we giving him? What opportunities are we actually giving him? And there wasn't much. There wasn't much. You're right, John. I don't think there was a lack of willingness to attack. I think ultimately, perhaps a little bit of quality isn't lacking. But that goes down. You know, we know that. We know that we haven't got the best players in the Premier League. We know that they're going to come up against superior defenders. And you know, I don't think that was a complete bust. I don't think it was a complete bust by any stretch of the imagination. I think. whether anyone of a non-Watford persuasion would agree that we might have deserved to get a point out of it remains to be seen. We'll have to wait and see. But it just reminds us. I think there's going to be an incredibly long, difficult season. But I think at least there was fight there today. At least there was some sort of semblance of organisation. Made it relatively difficult for Arsenal. They weren't cutting through us at will, were they? There wasn't wave after wave of attack. Obviously we came under pressure, obviously there's chances, it's Arsenal, they're at home, that's going to happen. But so I think from an organisational point of view, from a battling point of view, I can give them a tick. I think that where we're lacking is the quality and the decision making, and unfortunately the longer this run goes on, the harder it's going to be for confidence to lift and improve. You know, Joshua King coming off the back of Everton hasn't really kicked on, and we were saying, this is it for him now. This is the perfect springboard for him to go off. He hasn't, but no one has, and that's not a criticism of him.
He said in an interview this week, you know, he himself sees himself at 85%. You know, he has been playing some goals. He had a great hat trick, but he hasn't played a lot of football in the last year. He really hasn't done. DCW, what about Nkulu? If it was a date, are you going to be after a second date with him?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? Seemed like a nice lad. We had a nice time.
Are you taking home to your mum yet?
I'm not completely sold.
Okay.
Bit of work to do, but I'll certainly give him a chance on the
You're not changing that relationship status date. On social media.
No, but it was good for him to get 90 minutes. Yeah. I don't think he certainly didn't look out of place there. And that would have done him the world of good to get 90 minutes, to get a good test against a good team. He would have moved him around a lot. He had a lot to deal with at times. But I was quite surprised to see him start. We all kind of maybe were suspecting Sierra might have come straight back in, but maybe he's not quite up to speed yet. Trooster Kong goes down to the bench again. That was interesting. Mm. But yeah, I think you look at his career, he's experienced international, played a lot of games in Serie A. He's obviously an accomplished defender, and I think he... didn't look out of place today at all.
No, and that was the worry bit with Mr. Troost. Would he, after all the games he's played, the moments he's had, would that be a problem for him? Midfield-wise, Mike, grittier, especially from Kuchka. He had a good heart, a good game. He got his red card, but if you're going to get a red card, that's a sort of it's sort of like, I'm just going to whack the ball as hard as I can. And if I take a player, well, it was a wrong way away. At this point, it did look like from my... distant look, and I do wear glasses, but it was just a rambunctious kick. And he did have a few of those. Maybe it was the final thing, but it did come from Mr. Friend, and we know he's not our friend.
I'm guessing it, the yellow card is the fact that he's out of control, I guess, a reckless attempt to it. I mean, he got the ball. He obviously got the ball, cleaned out the man. But the problem we had, it does go back to the officiating, is that Kutzka was on a yellow card from very, very early. Joshua King was on a yellow card from very early. I've got absolutely no idea what that booking was for. I said to Dave at half time, I've been more aggressive walking to the bus stop, quite frankly, than it appeared Josh King was there. There are elements. I said it in midweek. Said it on Thursday. I think there are elements there that we can get behind, and you can see.
Did the performances today, were they better? Were they more of a unit? I think it was Kutzka, Tufan. He did go off. He didn't have a great game, Tufan. He didn't really impose himself. And then Sissoko, who was, I think, playing with a little bit of a Tottenham head on him.
If you look at the goal, though, the goal comes from them playing through, you know, working the ball from side to side, and then Smith Rowe scores from just outside the box. It's a sort of position, you know, without watching it back or whatever, just off memory at the moment. Where was Sissoko? Where was Kutzka? Where was Tufan? Could the centre backs come out? Like, there were times a little bit soft in the middle, maybe at times, but, you know. I don't think it was terrible. Like, they performed the sort of same as the rest of the team. There was plenty of effort, plenty of challenges. Sissoko is giving everything right to the last minute. Kutzka, one of his better performances, I would say. You know, we know what he does. He charges around and steaming into challenges. And today, he's ultimately fallen foul of that, thanks to an over-officious referee. But I was encouraged by that performance. I was applauding him off the pitch when he went off after the red card. But, you know, Tufan, for me, it's probably a difficult game for him because he doesn't seem to be very combative. So he's a sort of midfielder, I think, who needs to be in possession and to get on the ball and to try and make things happen. And he didn't get enough of the ball to make that happen today. So it was a bit of a frustrating one for him. But again, you know, no real alarm bells for me.
No, I thought we saw glimpses actually from Tufan. I thought he looked capable of getting. You know, John, you were talking about how we felt like we weren't attacking enough. He looked like he wanted to get the ball and drive on and try and take a man on early on. Certainly for the first sort of maybe 15, 20 minutes, in a low centre of gravity, scurrying forward with it, looking to be quick and decisive. And I quite enjoyed that. And I thought, right, it could be a decent day for him. But yeah, it didn't. It sort of petered out a little bit. But that, I don't think that's any criticism of him. I think that's just the pattern of the game. And yeah, look, ultimately, you know, that was far from a disaster. Far from a disaster. And I think there are green shoots. I'd say I was disappointed with Kutzka.
Keep using that word, green shoots, don't we? Yeah. When do we stop using that word, right, Mike?
Well, there's a frost coming. There's a cold, hard frost coming. I thought Kutzka was disappointed when he came in. I thought there were some pretty poor deliveries into the box. But look, it's... Who had any money on Watford winning today? No one in their right mind.
Isn't it great though, actually, that we are feeling a bit of frustration? Isn't it great that we could see actually how we could get something out of that game? Where if you literally see me, and as we were chatting away with Colin on the way here, you know, he's thinking it's going to be 4-0. This is going to be, we're going to be run over, and we weren't. I think that's actually an amazing feeling that we can capture at this moment. Us being a bit annoyed, but not ridiculously. Not ridiculous that we thought we could get something from the game, but you know what I mean? It was just like, it was way more than I thought.
It was a better, it was an okay performance. We haven't disgraced ourselves, but right. that's nothing to...
But we haven't had, how many okay performances have we had this year, Michael?
Right. But that ain't good enough, is it? I think just the fact to measure it against...
No, we had two great performances away at Everton, at home to Villa and away at Norwich. The other games have not been okay.
Yeah, but the baby doesn't need to be thrown out of the bathwater today. But, you know, you have to look at it in context of previous seasons, previous performances, where we are, what we've got coming up, where we are in the division. And I think there was a chance for a point there. I just feel frustrated we haven't got it. I think there's players who hopefully will feel like they're playing themselves. You know, it's interesting hearing Joshua King saying, I'm at 85%. We really need players not to be at 85%. We need players to be at 100%. And whether you can't... You can't magic yourself to 100% fitness. But I think, you know, it feels like there's some Premier League football in some Watford legs at long last. It feels like we've been playing at it a little bit. And I think hopefully they'll be able to take some encouragement. Like you're alluding to there, John, I think we can take a little bit of heart from the heart that was shown from Watford. But the bottom line is quality. quality when it counts. It was lacking again today, and that's what's ultimately cost us. And I think that has to be a concern. But, you know, I'll half kick the cat, I think, when I get in.
Thank you much, DCW.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, look. No worries.
Thanks for calling early on. Thank you for listening. Remember, back on Thursday with another podcast with Adam. Remember, you can subscribe to The Athletic with a special offer, thanks to From the Rookery End, by going to theathletic.com/rookeryend. And we will continue to follow this season as Watford fans in the Premier League, and hopefully very soon with lots of joy and celebration. Come on, you Ones!
The Athletic.